Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to You Are Not Your Mother, the podcast for parents who want to do things differently. This month, we're going to be talking to Harriet Brown, who is the author of Shadow Daughter, a memoir of estrangement. And we're going to specifically be talking about her experience and my experience being estranged from our respective mothers. The reason I decided to post this interview this month is that I spoke with Jackie Tintillo for her podcast, Should Have Listened to My Mother, and I'll include a link to that in my show notes, which gave me the opportunity to revisit my relationship with my mom. And it made me think about this interview with Harriet because I think it gives some background and some insight into the situation that we really didn't have time to get into in Jackie's podcast. And then the other reason I wanted to share it this month is it's the holidays, and the holidays are when difficult relationships with family are much more in our face because we are expected to do a lot around the holidays with family. For those of us who are estranged from family, it can be a more difficult time. It can feel lonelier. We may be running up against the ways that our family relationships are not what we wish that they were. I find great comfort in connecting with other people who understand what it is to have a difficult relationship with a parent. And so I'm hoping for those of you who might not have that support will find it in listening to this podcast. The other thing I wanted to mention is that in this podcast, I talk a little bit about the kind of parents that I tend to work with in my clinical practice, but also in my membership, Child Anxiety Support, and they're the parents that I call high-intensity parents. Harriet and I talk about that she strongly identified with the attachment parenting movement when she was raising her kids, and I did too. And I identified with these parents who were working really, really, really hard at getting it exactly right. Those are the kinds of parents that I work with in my practice and in Child Anxiety Support, in part because those are the parents who are most willing to come and do the heavy lifting of trying to figure out their parenting. I love these kinds of parents, partly because I was that person. I really feel for them and their pull to get everything right with the reality that that's simply not possible. There's no way to get everything right. And dealing with our own grief around that, our own frustrations with ourselves, our inability to be the perfect parents we think our children need that they don't actually really need. And also for those of us who are doing this because we are trying to change family patterns of dysfunction. We're trying to be different than our own parents. I guess my point is that estrangement goes right along with the other topics I love to talk about, which is high intensity parents, parenting anxious kids, trying to get things right without a clear guidebook. Okay, so let's head into the interview with Harriet Brown, author of Shadow Daughter, a memoir of estrangement. Hi, Harriet. Thank you for meeting with me today. I so appreciate it. And can you introduce yourself a little bit for the audience?
Sure. My name is Harriet Brown. I teach magazine, news, and digital journalism at Syracuse University. And I am a journalist. I've written a number of books and stories for publications. And my most recent book, which we'll be talking about, I think, today is about family estrangement. It's called Shadow Daughter, a memoir of estrangement.
And what I really love about your book is it's not just a memoir.
it's a lot of reported. You did a lot of research and a lot of interviews. And just a hint for the listeners, I'm Sharon in the book. You can search me if you like. So you're sharing a number of people's stories and also what experts have to say about estrangement.
Yeah, to me, that's how I like to approach a subject like this. It's interesting because I think some readers have been angry that it wasn't like straight memoir. But for me as a reader, I know if I'm going out reading about something, either because it matters to me personally or because I'm just interested in it, I really want to know, like, how do other people experience this? What are some other ways that people respond to this situation? And then because I'm a science geek, like, what does the research tell us? What do we know about those things? What don't we know about those things? Who's looking at them? What are they saying? I don't know. Many questions.
I remember when you were working on the book, you were surprised that you didn't find more about estrangement.
Yeah, there's very little. There's very few people who actually study this. I think there's a number of reasons. And one of them is because there's such a strong imperative in our culture to not be estranged from especially from like your family of origin, right? If everyone has conflicts with parents, siblings, more extended family, like conflict is part of being human on the one hand, but on the other hand, we don't have a lot of societal mechanisms for how to handle it when you have conflicts that cannot be managed, cannot be resolved, cannot be solved. And so there's this, and I understand it like from an evolutionary perspective, why the human species has this strong imperative to stay connected, right? Because in many times and places, your survival might have depended on having strong family networks and connections. I totally get that. I'm not against that. I love that. Like, in fact, I think a lot of people who wind up estranged, it's because they value those close relationships so much and they want them so much, but they can't make them work in whatever configuration they have them. There's this, it's very threatening to people individually and also, I think, socially. If you say to them, yeah, I'm estranged from my mother, from my father, I haven't talked to them in X amount of time, it tends to really flip people out. And so a lot of people don't talk about it and a lot of people don't research it. And in fact, the one researcher who I talked to the most told me that when she had proposed for her PhD, which is psychology, I think it's psychology. Anyway, for her PhD work, she had proposed doing what she wound up doing, which was this work on estrangement. And her committee told her, forget that. You will never find people. You'll never find anyone who will talk to you about this. And she told me it was so easy to find people because people are dying to talk about this because no one lets them talk about it.
How did you go about finding the people that you interviewed for your book?
A combination of things, like some were people I knew tangentially. One was a friend, and then I put the word out through them. And some people, like I have a whole cluster of people in Columbus, Ohio, which I think all came from one person, but social media, it wasn't hard to find people. And the people I found were just dying to talk about it. Similarly to what that researcher had told me. Some of the most heartbreaking stuff I heard was from, like, I remember this one woman who told me, I don't really have any close friends. And in large part, it's because I don't want to get into this with anyone because people don't understand it. They judge you for it. I don't want to go there with them. And there's a lot of shame, I think, that people also feel if you've been estranged. I think particularly if you were not the one who chose the estrangement, although most of the people I talked to had chosen it. But I did talk to some who hadn't. And I think that people on both sides of that you feel shame because you feel like, God, what's wrong with me? Why? Everyone fights with their parents, but I'm the only one I know who wound up not in any kind of relationship with them. It must be me because of the nature of those relationships. We can get into this, and I'm sure we will. Like, why do people tend to get estranged? And often those relationships are experienced as abusive in some way, right? And then you get into this whole gaslighting situation where I feel this is an abusive relationship and I have certain reactions to it, but I'm being told all the time, it's not abusive. What's wrong with you? Just buck up, just let it go, just whatever. So it's there's a lot of complicated negative feelings around it. So people don't talk about it. And now I've been so long-winded, I forget what you actually asked me in the first place.
We're just riffing on estrangement. That's our thing. I think of myself as I chose estrangement, but at the time, my therapist who I was seeing at the time said, you didn't choose it. You set a boundary and your mother chose to violate it. So she actually chose the estrangement. And that kind of blew my mind. That was one of those times that I left therapy and immediately had to call my best friend and process that, because it's true. I don't think that when we choose to walk away from a relationship that is harmful to us, that doesn't mean we are the one who chose the disruption. We just chose to hold the boundary. And the thing my therapist said was, your mother would rather be mean to you than continue to have a relationship with you.
That is a great, I wish I had heard that from you like 10 years ago or from someone, because I'm sure my therapist at the time said it to me in other ways, but there's so much guilt over it too, especially because I think this was your experience, but you'll tell me, very often the people who are on the, let's say I estranged myself from my mother. So my mother, the people in that situation, there's no good like verb or noun mm-hmm. to use about them. Estrange, I don't know. Anyway, there was so much guilt from her, from my sister, from other family members. Oh, you don't know what this is doing to your mother. This is killing your mother. She just cries all the time. Like I remember after my mother died, my father didn't know if he wanted to have a relationship with me after she died, but eventually we did have a relationship. And one of the things he said to me was, I have to say that Mother's Day is a lot easier now, because it was a horrible day, because your mother was always like sobbing all day long because she didn't have a relationship with you, or you didn't send her a card or send her flowers or whatever the thing was that I was supposed to do that I always failed to do. There's so much just pressure and guilt mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, my brother and I talked and he said, I don't know why you don't just reach out to her. And I said, just so you know, I send her a birthday card every year. And now what I do is I make a donation in her name to a charity that I know will be meaningful to her. I no longer do Mother's Day with her, but on her birthday, I send $50 to an organization I know she'll care about and have that sent to her. And he had no idea that I was still doing that. But of course, that's not information she's sharing with the family.
See, that's part of it too, that the narrative is very selective on the other side. So like, I actually very recently reconnected with a cousin, like a second cousin I hadn't talked to in a long time. And she grew up, and our families were close geographically, and our mothers were friendly, very friendly with each other. And she told me like she had a pretty skewed vision of what had actually happened between me and my mother. And she told me that in her household, I was always referred to as the FB, the fucking bitch. And she said, I always knew there was more to the story, but like a lot of the things that I then told her in that conversation, she had no idea. My mother wasn't going around telling people about all the mean things she did. It was always like, oh, Harriet's so mean. Poor me. What did I ever do? I don't understand why. I keep asking her and she doesn't tell me, which is also a refrain that you hear from people. So that one of the few studies that have been done, it didn't match the cohort. So it's not like they were able to talk to two people in the same relationship, one who had done the estranging and one who had been estranged. But they did talk to people in both conditions. And the people who had set the boundaries that led to the estrangement all said things like, I've tried every way I know to explain this, to articulate it, to lay out exactly what would make me feel okay with continuing whatever. And the person never can follow through with that. And the people on the other side were always constantly saying, I have no idea. What did I do wrong? What happened? And the researchers' conclusion was the people on that other side can't let themselves know. Mm. It's not that they're not smart enough to know. It's not that they don't understand what these people are telling them, but it's like they're so well defended against whatever it is that they simply cannot see it, acknowledge it. And that's what I came to feel about my mother, because my God, I'm a writer and I felt like such a failure. I felt like if only I could find the right words, and I never could. But then I thought there are no right words, because she can't let herself hear this. And I don't know why that is, because I don't know what was going on inside her. I could speculate, but I really don't know. So for whatever reason, it was easier for her to hold on to this narrative that said, my daughter's abandoning me, woe is me. And that was more important to her than actually trying to heal the relationship.
I think you hit on that. Is that happens so much. I know in my therapy office, people are really hanging on to this idea. If I could explain it right, yeah, then things could be different. It's on me to communicate it in such a way. And they'll often bring into me, this is the letter that I'm going to write my mother. This is, or they'll show me the Facebook messages. And this, and can you tell me, will she get it? And I always say, you say what you need to say and give up on the idea of her understanding it. Because either she's going to understand it and it's great and you're going to heal and it's going to be wonderful, or she's not. Yeah. And that's got actually nothing to do with the way you word it, because either she's going to want to understand you or she's not.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think that's partly because we want to feel like we have some measure of control over it, right? If only I found the right words, then all of this trauma could move toward a different, we could start to heal it. But no, it's like everything else in life. You have to let go of the outcome because you don't have any control over it. And you certainly have no control over how another person responds to you. I came to feel that my mother had gone through some traumas and some difficult things that I didn't know about and that shaped her, and that she wasn't able or willing to look at for herself. And that's her choice. But then that led to her behaving in certain ways that then led to me saying, I can't. Like everyone I talk to about this, a lot of people, more than 50 people, almost everyone said, like, it was years of being, like, I would get sick every time I had any kind of interaction with my mother, like physically sick, emotionally sick, dysfunctional, depressed, panic attacks, crying jags, like, you name it. It just, from a very casual interaction with her, and it didn't even have to be traumatic interaction, but it was just because the whole relationship was so traumatic. And this is your mother, right? The person who's supposed to love you and be on your side no matter what. And yeah, it's just really hard.
What are commonalities? Because you and I both have siblings who were not estranged from our mothers. So what commonalities do you see in those of us who end up becoming estranged?
That is a good question. I think that it has to do with probably constitutional inability to gloss things over, for one thing, like a sort of primal need to like say what's happening, to tell the truth about something as you see it. So that's one thing, right? Like my sister often said to me, why don't you just, or my husband even said to me often, like, why don't you just let that stuff go by? Why don't you just, doesn't matter what she says, which was true. It didn't matter what she said. Like, why don't you just, and I did try that sometimes, but that was hard for me to do. So I think being, for some people who maintain those relationships, maybe they're just able to let things go more. But I think the bigger thing is that the people who are in those difficult relationships and don't estrange have a very powerful need to maintain the relationship. Everybody does. I know that for my sister, I think it was important to her core identity in some way to stay in that relationship with my mother, even though my mother did some pretty nasty things to her too. So that's a piece of it. But then I also think, and I'm sure you've experienced this as a therapist, like parents have different relationships with kids. So I think my mother was actually much nicer to my sister than she was to me for whatever reason. So I think, I don't know if there's like personality traits that make people more likely to estrange, but I do think there are situational traits that, or situations that, like, I was a much more independent person than my sister. And that was both what helped save me, but it's also what caused the estrangement, because at a certain point I just said, no, I can't have this in my life and I don't need this in my life. Of course I need it, but I will be okay without this relationship if that's what it takes. And I don't think my sister could ever make that choice. So yeah, it's so complicated.
That is yet another place where there really, it would be great if there was more research.
Yes, there would.
Because I always think one of the reasons I was able to leave, ironically, is that I was the golden child. I was better treated by my mother. Mm. And I think, again, ironically, she raised me well enough to leave her. So, and I had a very emotionally abusive boyfriend in my teens. And she would often say, somebody being an abuse survivor is not an excuse for them to treat you poorly, which is a message I then took into my relationship with her. Mm-hmm. But I know it's also more common for the person who's the identified scapegoat to mm-hmm. leave, because mm-hmm. they're not getting much out of the relationship anyway. Why would they stick around?
That's right? Really interesting. I wonder how common it is for that golden child to be the one to leave, because my impression, unscientifically, is that it's more often the scapegoat. And that was the role I played in my family, the scapegoat, for sure. Yes. And I think that my sister, as the golden child, yeah, she didn't have as many reasons to go. She was getting some of what she needed from the relationship.
And also, we hang in there. Oh, gosh, I'm going to forget it. So what's the deal with the monkeys? We'll keep hitting the button if the food only comes sometimes.
Intermittent conditioning.
Thank you.
Yes.
That is another thing that keeps us hanging in there, is our mothers are not continuously terrible.
My mother, it's weird. Like, I spent a lot of time trying to remember more positive things. And mm-hmm. I definitely remembered a few things from, like, before I was five, let's say. I really don't remember anything after that. And I don't know if that's me blocking out the more positive things, or if there really weren't that many. I don't know.
Well, that, do you think it matter? My take is it doesn't matter. That's my bias. Do you think it matters whether or not you're a reliable narrator? Like, that you're able to talk about the facts of the relationship versus your experience of the relationship?
Well, no, because there is no, mm-hmm. there's no objective. Everyone who's going to have their own take on it and their own experience of it. Yes, that's a good point. Like, when we talk about relationships, we're not like reporting government actions where there's, this is a fact, this happened, this didn't happen. Things happen, but we all see them so differently. So I guess it doesn't really matter, no. And because a relationship is about your connection with another person, and if it's messed up, it in a way, maybe it doesn't matter why, except that if you then want to address, like, how can we make this relationship better?
In your disclaimer at the front of the book, you say, I kept really detailed diaries because you're, and then also acknowledged, but that doesn't mean that other people wouldn't have a different understanding of these experiences. And part of that is just what you do when you're writing a nonfiction book. But part of it, I thought, is the anticipation that people tend not to believe our reports, or you must have misunderstood. She probably didn't mean it like that. And those are the things we tell ourselves.
Yes.
For a long time too.
Yeah.
And again, in my therapy office, people, they so badly need to be validated. This experience that I'm having, please validate it for me, because I keep thinking I must be wrong. I keep being told that I am wrong. So what are your thoughts about the need for validation that people have when they're considering estrangement?
I think on some level you want to be wrong. I think you want to be wrong because you want to think, even though it would be very hard and painful, you want to think that if I could do something different, that would change things. Because if the alternative is to look squarely in the face at the fact that this person who you love and who loves you, presumably, is treating you like shit. And that's really hard. Like, that for me was the hardest thing. Like, you can... I felt like I could forgive. Everyone gets angry sometimes. Everyone says a few things they maybe don't mean, but, like, to be consistently treated in a way that reveals that person who's supposed to love you, whatever, looks down on you, dislikes you, doesn't like who you are as a person, that's so painful that I think we will contort ourselves in any way to avoid having to confront that. But the thing is, once you see that, I think especially when it's apparent, then it's, for me, that was like, that was the end. Once I really saw that and was able to acknowledge that my mother didn't like me, she didn't want to like me, she didn't want to know who I was, and she didn't, yeah, she just didn't care for me in some fundamental way, then it was easier to be like, okay, that's the end. That's it. I'm done.
So did you find in your research that people tend to operate on a continuum of estrangement? On, I know people talk low contact versus no contact.
Yeah.
What did you learn about that?
Yes, that there's a huge continuum, and that I think you could probably philosophically say that we all operate on that continuum all the time in our relationship with other people. But yes, that there's, I think it's pretty rare in that it's less common for people to wind up on the no contact end of things. It's much more common for people to control either like proximity, like there's a reason my sister moved 3,000 miles away. That was part of a reason, I'm sure. So they control their proximity, or they control the emotional content that they're willing to share. There's a technique that I mentioned in the book called gray rocking, where people, like, they're still in contact with the person, but they're keeping up a wall. They're not going to let themselves be vulnerable in any way, and therefore they're not going to talk about anything with any emotional content. Your mother says, how are you? How's work? And it doesn't matter what's actually going on at work. You say, oh, it's great. How are things with you? And you just deflect it back onto that person, and you keep, you just don't reveal much. And that's a way of keeping yourself safe. And it's a way of limiting the relationship. And sadly, a lot of times the people who are being gray rocked don't even seem to notice. They might not know the difference. I don't know. So yeah, there's a huge continuum. And I think, and people move around on it. I think, I'm trying to recall, I don't remember the exact statistic, but I think what the research shows is, like, before people go no contact, they bounce around on that end of the spectrum a lot. They'll go through a period where they're really trying to connect, and then something will happen, and then they'll have no contact for a while, but then they'll come back and they'll try, or they'll try only sending a Mother's Day card or a birthday card or whatever. And you can spend a lot of years doing that. And then for some people, they do eventually come to that. Nope, I cannot have this. I cannot have the possibility of this connection anymore. I have to, like, for my own sanity and safety, I have to let go of it. And I know for myself, one of the very telling things was that it took years after my mother died for me to even begin to feel safe, even just feeling some of this stuff inside myself. It reinforced for me how unsafe I felt in that relationship. Even when she was on her deathbed, when I did go to the hospital to mostly to support my sister and my father, and my mother was dying basically, and she was sedated, she was on a ventilator, she was not aware that we could see of anything. And I was standing in that room with my sister, and the nurse was like, oh, we're going to lighten up the sedation, let's see if we can get her to know you're here. And my response was terror. I was literally hiding behind my sisters. I don't want her to see me. I don't want her to know I'm here. And I was like, why do I feel this way? She's on a vent. Like, she can't do anything to me. But it just didn't matter. It was a lifetime of feeling unsafe. So again, I'm sorry I rambled away from
No, no, I'm thinking, when I look back at my own experience, I realize I was moving around that continuum. I did not allow myself to acknowledge that's what I was doing when I moved across the country, when I was too busy for the weekly phone calls, that mm-hmm. It's only in retrospect, I can see that I was trying to manage this relationship. Mm-hmm. This is in the book, when you interviewed me, I worshiped my mother. If you had asked anybody, I was her biggest fan. Mm-hmm. And it took becoming estranged for me to realize I was actually in thrall. Very often in these relationships, they're demanding all or nothing.
Yes.
And so you do try to give them what they're your parent. You want right. to give them what they're demanding of you.
Right.
Yeah.
and what they need. I know I always felt with my mother, not always, but once I was an adult and could process things, I was aware that there was this like bottomless pit of need in her, and that all of our conflicts seemed to resolve around the fact that she wanted me to fix it and I couldn't. And yeah, when I was a kid, I tried to fix it. And I remember some of those efforts. And then you can't. You cannot fix someone else's need. You simply cannot.
And that's true too. So in this relationship we have with this person who wasn't able to meet our needs, they can't fix that. So right. Sometimes we keep coming back to the well because we think, finally, I'm going to get that love and attention I didn't get. But they actually can't do that, because if they weren't there for you when they were children, when you were a child, that's unfortunately, that's on us to fix in ourselves.
That's a painful moment when you realize that, because where it leaves you, especially if you yourself then have children, which for me, being a parent was very healing, but it also raised a lot of feelings of, I didn't get this stuff from my family, and now I have to give it to these, or I want to give it to my children, and I choose to give it to them, but so I didn't get it, but I still have to give it. That's a hard position, but it's also a very empowering position, because you're like, I can break this cycle. Like, my mother didn't get what she needed, and she just laid that all on me. I didn't get what I needed, but I've tried to take responsibility for that and work through it to the best of my ability so I can give my kids what they need. And that was very healing, because I think that in some ways, it's almost like you're parenting your own child self at the same time that you're parenting your actual children. And so I wasn't going to have children, partly because of my really messed up family. And I'm so grateful that I did, because my life would have been much worse in so many ways, obviously.
So what are the resources you drew on to be a different kind of parent?
10 years of really good therapy. It changed my life. And I'd had a lot of therapy before that, but I finally had, I guess I didn't find this therapist till after I'd had my children. But anyway, that helped me. But I think I was really determined to do things differently. I was really determined. I knew I would make mistakes as a parent and mess things up, but I was really determined to not make the same mistakes my mother did. And when I was parenting my daughters, they were both born in the 90s. So I was like very gung-ho on like attachment, what's called attachment parenting, because I never got any of that as a kid. And I'm not sorry. I think that was a really good strategy. Like, I'm just going to do this differently. And it helped that I had a really supportive partner and a therapist at some point, and good friends. But you just have to I don't know. This is maybe more of a question for you as someone who does therapy. Like, what has to happen for someone who doesn't get what they need in childhood to then be able to turn around and give that?
I think that's the million-dollar question. But I do think my theory is many of us who ended up in the attachment parenting community, and now it's like mindful parenting, gentle parenting, but I call it high intensity motherhood. Mm-hmm. We are doing it from a place of trauma, recognized or unrecognized. Mm-hmm. And so my clients tend to be high intensity parents. They are very hard on themselves. They do a lot of research and reading, and they're really struggling and succeeding in not being their parents. I think it often comes at a cost of their own well-being, because as I tell clients, letting your child fuss while you take a quick shower is not the same as abandoning them alone in the woods.
Like, ding, ding for me.
But it's really triggering. And it's hard not to separate ourselves from our children and recognize they don't have our mothers. They're not experiencing life in the same way that we did. And so they can handle some things that for us might have been a lot to handle.
Oh, that is so true. I remember after my older daughter was born, again, that was a period of time when I was trying very hard to reconnect with my mother. I thought, oh, I've had this child. That's something we can both focus on. That's not our relationship. And maybe things actually will go better. And none of that was true. But I do remember asking her, like, because my older daughter was a terrible sleeper. Oh my God. Didn't sleep through the night till she was like 4. And I remember asking my mother, what was I like as a child? Did I sleep? She said, I don't know. I put you in the room at 7 o'clock and I in the crib, and then I got you out at 7 the next morning. I don't know what you did in there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that explains a lot. That explains a lot of my feelings, a lot of my difficulties. That was very illuminating. So yes, so I would, I know that I probably went too far in that way when I was parenting my young children. I didn't want them to have to ever feel what I had felt. And that's that place of trauma that you're talking about. And it's so vivid, isn't it?
And I know so many of us who are estranged are afraid that our children will then be estranged from us. And I think that you have a quote in your book where somebody's mother, maybe it was your mother, I can't remember now, said, "This is going to happen to you. You will be punished the way you're punished." Yeah. So how did you deal with that fear? Or was it a fear for you?
It's been a momentary fear at times. I've certainly had conflicts with my children, but not really a fear, because I do think that they both knew that whatever our conflicts and whatever, however much they might be rolling their eyes or whatever, like I hoped that they had a fundamental understanding that I loved them and I was there for them, even if I did the wrong thing, which I didn't have with my mother. That was really the bottom line. Like, my mother said, "I love you" all the time, but her behavior didn't match up with what she said. And so I never felt loved by her. And so at a certain point, I knew that my children felt loved by me, along with whatever else they were feeling, annoyed, impatient, whatever. But yeah, my mother like cursed me basically. And so sometimes I still joke like with people when, my mother's looking down and saying, "Haha," I still feel that way about her. I don't even believe in an afterlife or anything, but if I did, that's what I would be thinking was happening.
You hit on it. So we were talking about how my therapist said it's actually they who choose the estrangement by not hearing our boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that is the difference, is we do hear our children's boundaries. And my son, my adult son, got really angry with us right before lockdown and wrote us an angry text that I can't remember what it said, but it really scared me. Like, I immediately went, "He's never going to speak to me again. This is the beginning of the end. Estrangement runs in families." And then came to my senses and realized he's taking a break. And mm-hmm. I'm hearing him, because my response to the text was, "I am so sorry. I'm glad you told me. Mm-hmm. I will not do this thing again." It wasn't, "How dare you? I'm your mother. Of course I know what you need."
Exactly.
And does estrangement run in families? It certainly runs in my family.
It does. I think it does. And why that is, we could sure use some more research on that. Is it that you learn that's so there are websites, and there are like psychologists who have written books, like Joshua Coleman pops to mind, who very often speaks to and from the perspective of those parents who might be on the receiving end of those boundaries that they can't handle. And a lot of people on those websites and in those contexts will say things like, "You're just teaching a kid that it's okay to walk away from a relationship at the first sign of trouble." They say it's a learned behavior. That's one way to look at it. I don't know. But like, another potential explanation, of course, is that patterns of abusiveness run in families, and that therefore those same reactions to those patterns of abusiveness might happen, but we don't really know. But they do seem to cluster and run in families. And as part of my research for this book, I did talk with a couple of parents who had been on the receiving end of those boundaries. And they all seemed to really believe that it was small things that had caused the boundaries or the ruptures. They all seemed to think, my son was just mad because everyone else, all the other kids in his school, got a BMW for high school graduation, and we could only afford a Ford Fit or something. I don't think so. I really don't think that's why people estrange themselves from their families, but they were often very committed to those narratives.
And you found that the UK has more, there's more happening there. There's that organization for estranged students.
Standalone, yes.
Yeah.
Which was started by a journalist. I'm blanking on her name right now, but she actually, that whole thing started when she published a story in The Guardian years ago around Christmas time about her own estrangement from her family. And that just triggered an outpouring. And I think that because in the UK, like, there's a lot more of a social net, and there's housing allowances, there's like various kinds of supports you can access, but you could mainly access them in the context of a nuclear family. So if you were an adolescent or young adult who was estranged from their parents, like you really had trouble accessing some of those supports. So she started this charity, Standalone, which both for emotional support, but also to help people in that situation, like figure out how to access and also to lobby the government to say, hey, not all families are intact in some way. And you have to acknowledge that some people need these things, but they're not in connection with their family of origin or whatever. So I think it's been very big there. And I think that they've also been able to support some research, at least anecdotal research, at least qualitative research into estrangement. So that's all good. That all helps us understand this better.
Estrangement is more common than we realize then, isn't it?
It's way more common than we realize, especially if you understand that it is a continuum and it's not just, I don't talk to my parents or my whoever at all. If you understand that someone who says, yeah, I'll talk to my family once a month in this very controlled way, that's also a form of estrangement. But even no contact estrangement is much more common than we think, which is, I think, important for people to know because, again, so many people feel shame and the stigma and that they're being judged and they don't talk about it or they don't get close to people. But once you do start talking to other people, you start to hear a lot more people than you might think saying, yeah, I don't talk to my brother, my sister, my father, my mother, whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely since I have been out about being estranged from my mom, a lot of people describe to me that they're somewhere on that continuum as well. Mm-hmm. It's not something they advertise. It's not something you just volunteer. I just volunteer it because I think it's important that we be open about it. I try very hard to acknowledge that my mother too, she would have a different version of our relationship, as well as my siblings and other extended family. Mm-hmm. And which leads me to forgiveness that some people, many therapeutic professionals think that you need to have a formal forgiveness. And I disagree with that. I think that one, you can forgive and still not have a relationship. And two, that forgiveness is not necessarily something you have to do in order to heal. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, I have long thought about forgiveness in the context of this relationship. And I'm still trying to understand what forgiveness is. And there's different definitions of it. And I think that for a long time, I was dead set against it because I believed that forgive, because people tell you this, forgive and forget, they say. But those are two very different things. I think, again, I don't fully know what forgiveness means. Whatever it means, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to A, pretend that none of this happened, or B, that you have to put yourself back in harm's way. So I was empowering for me and somewhat liberating to feel like I could go through a process, some kind of process of forgiveness, but it could be totally internal to me. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to drive what I did or how I interacted with my family. So yeah, what is forgiveness exactly? Like I could ask you as a therapeutic provider, what does it mean to you? Because, and people will, and there's a lot of research on forgiveness, a lot of which I read, there's a lot of research on that. And a lot of it talks about forgiveness is something you do for yourself, that it's a way of working through negative feelings, experiences, whatever, you know, but there is this cultural expectation that that then is going to lead to you behaving in a different way, going back into a relationship or being vulnerable in it again or whatever. And that's always where it, that's where I couldn't really go there.
Yeah. Even Toxic Parents, which is like one of the great big books. The last chapter is all about forgiveness. It's all about healing the relationship.
You can't heal these relationships. If you could have, you would have, like 10 years way earlier. And that's what I think a lot of people do. They have conflicts, they heal them. I can think offhand of a number of friends with adult kids who, yeah, they went through a rough period, but they listened to each other and they came to some other way of relating and now they have a relationship. But at a certain point, you can't do that by yourself. I remember so many times my mother saying to me, let's just start over. That was her answer to everything. Let's start over. I was like, we can't start over. We actually tried. I tried to go along with that sometimes. And I remember saying to her, like, we're going to have to slowly build trust. This is a process. It's not something that we don't just throw everything that happened before away and start, like, we have to, and we, I think maybe we could rebuild it, but she could never do that. She wanted to go from zero to 120. She wanted to just forget about everything that happened and, oh, let's just start over. And then of course she would do all the same things. I don't know. Where does that leave you? That's very painful. What do you think forgiveness means?
I think it means different things for different people. But for me, in the context of this relationship with my mother, she had a terrible growing up. I understand why she thinks mine was great, because it was 1,000 times better than mm-hmm. hers. And one of the things I think about a lot is it was the 70s and corporal punishment was a thing. And she spanked us with a wooden spoon. She'd slap us, pinch us. So I think it went beyond that, but to her, it didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, she controlled herself because her father would punch the kid's closed fist. Yeah. Right. So when I would say to my friends, I need to get home early or my mom's going to hit me, she would say, you can't tell them I hit you. I have never hit you. She would believe that. But my experience of it was I was terrified of her. And actually, I think, oh, what's that book? It's, Olive Kittredge. My mother is Olive Kittredge.
Oh, uh-huh.
That movie is so my mother. And the two big arguments she has with her son, mm-hmm. That's exactly where I would be. And at one point she slaps his son across the face. And then later on, when he says something about you hurt me when I was a kid, she said, I would never hurt a child. So I forgive that I truly believe she did the best she could. Mm-hmm. I forgive her for not being able to do better. Mm-hmm. But like you said, that does not mean I have to put myself in harm's way. I love her, even though I don't think she loves me. Mm-hmm. And that belongs to me. Like, when I realized that my relationship with my mother belonged to me and not to her, mm-hmm. then I allow myself to enjoy the things I enjoy about her, to take the legacies that are meaningful to me, and the rest I release. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. Mm-hmm. So I can love that she did better than her parents. I'm really proud of her. I also can say, but what you did give me was not enough and I deserved more. Mm-hmm. It's a tricky balancing place.
It is. And yeah, I didn't get to that point with my mother. I think I did get to the point of understanding. Actually, the angriest my mother ever got at me in our entire relationship was when I one day, trying to be empathetic, said to her, just something pretty, I thought it was pretty generic. I know that, like, your childhood had some tough times. Because it did. She grew up poor, youngest of three kids, single mother, her parents divorced in the 30s, which mm-hmm. wasn't done. They scraped by, had lots of traumatic experiences. And I think there were some other things that happened in there too. But wow, did she go ballistic. How dare you say that? How dare you? We were poor, but we had love. My mother was great. Whoa. Okay. You're very well defended around this. I hear you. You cannot even go there. So I could in myself then say some kind of trauma has happened there. Mm-hmm. And I feel compassion for her. And similar to what you said, my childhood looked 1,000 times better than hers. I had two parents. We had enough to eat. We weren't, you know, we weren't rich, but we weren't poor. We weren't, like, in danger of being thrown out on the street. And they fed us, they clothed us, they got us all the trappings of a certain middle-class life. And I am grateful for those things, but that's not enough, as you say.
And that's a birthright. It's the birthright of a child to be. I think School of Life has a book called How to Overcome Your Childhood, and mm-hmm. has a really good discussion of what is a privileged childhood, and it is being able to take for granted that you are loved and cared for. And that's not actually a privilege that many of us have. It was conditional, or it wasn't enough, or yeah. And I will add that if my mother ever listened to this podcast, which she won't, I know, because I'm pretty sure she's not stalking me privately. Siblings uh-huh. might be, but she would be furious that I have forgiven her. I know, because what has she done?
Right. To merit forgiveness.
How dare you, Dawn? Right. There's something you say at the end of your book when you're talking about your relationship with your father and your sister, and its estrangement takes a life of its own. Can you explain what you meant by that, if you remember it?
I remember it vividly. My problems with my mother then, they weren't just between me and my mother. They affected other people. So like my sister told me after our mother died, she basically was able to articulate to me some of the emotional burden that she felt because I was out of the picture. So she was like, it had to be me for their 50th anniversary, making it feel special and putting on the whatever. It had to be me for every birthday and Mother's Day. And my sister, rightly, I think, felt resentful that no matter what she did, it never felt good enough because there was always this other thing that my mother was like, oh, my other daughter, blah, blah. So that affected my sister's life. It affected my father's life. But then it also ripples out into the rest of the family, right? Like I was telling you before we started recording here that I have, you know, cousins who grew up hearing about me as this evil, awful person because of what I had done to my mother. And so there's branches of the family that hate me basically and don't speak to me. And that's sad for me. It's just hard. And families are like, oh, I'm trying to think of some biological metaphor, but I can't. But I'm thinking about what happens when a space opens up in a circle and the circle closes down to get rid of that space. That's often what it feels like. And I think that like, I was very close with my grandparents, my father's parents. They lived very near us. And I know that my grandmother knew of the conflicts in our house. And I know that she didn't think they were good. And she tried to support me, but she also rightly wanted to maintain a relationship with her son and her daughter-in-law. So it shaped our relationship too. Like I felt betrayed by her sometimes. Why can't you make this stop? Why can't I go live with you? Why can't whatever? So it's hard. And so I totally get that families don't want to deal with it. Like they just want everyone to make up and be friendly. And we don't have to deal with all of this. And they don't want to. And I guess I also get why people take sides so much. One of the things I respect about my sister is that whatever she thought at various points, she maintained a relationship with both me and our mother. She didn't pick one of us. But I think that the temptation to just pick a side is powerful.
Oh, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. How did you know things could be different? How did you know enough to say, this is not how it ought to be?
Wow, that is a good question. I don't think I have an answer to that. I think it might have been therapy helped me see that over time. And I was also aware that in my 20s, I had a really rough time. I had major anxiety disorder, panic disorder. Even as I was very high functioning, I was a mess inside. Mm-hmm. And I was aware that wasn't like normal or typical or obviously desirable. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe on some level, I still don't 100% believe. I think it's when you have your own kids, actually. I think that's part of it. And actually, a lot of the people I talked to for the book told me stories that were basically like, I drew that boundary finally when that toxic person started doing it to my kids. Like something that maybe I think I deserve this, or maybe I'm not clear about whether it's okay. But when I see it happening to my kid, I'm 100% clear, and that's it. So I do think it's easier to see with other, in the context of other people, especially your children. I don't know if you hear that in therapy.
Yeah, and that was certainly my experience too. My son was definitely the golden child. He was the first grandkid. And I wish I had protected him better from that. But at the time, I thought that did protect him. And then when my daughter came along, she started being a target. And so what I realize now is I started pulling back to protect my daughter. And that was a breaking point for me. And I see that in clients, but I also see when it hits them, I should have had something different. I love this child so much. I can't imagine doing this thing that was done to me. How could she have done this?
Right. Exactly. There's like this incredible realization. Like after my mother died, I became aware of basically my parents had cut me out of their will. And that seemed reasonable to me, given the fact that I hadn't been in touch with my mother for a long time and whatever. It seemed reasonable at first. And then I was talking to another friend who also happens to be a therapist, as it is. And she said, could you imagine doing that to either of your children, no matter what kind of conflicts you had? And I was like, no. And then I thought, oh, I could never imagine doing that. Wow. Okay. Gives you perspective.
It does. When my mother first cut me off, I was crying to my therapist and saying, how could she do this to her grandchildren? And she said, Dawn, she's doing this to her daughter. And I was like, yeah, but I probably deserve it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that though, because I think for a lot of the people I talk to and for myself too, like that's part of it was like, why I thought maybe having my own children would heal things with my mother, because I thought, okay, I didn't think this consciously, but there's something wrong with me. It's understandable that she treats me this way. I probably deserve it, but she wouldn't do that to her beloved granddaughters. And then when my mother turned around and did exactly the same things to them, it was like, oh, this is very different. This is not okay.
Yeah. And for me, as I said, I had this veil of denial on. And so my therapist, I saw her when I was in my teens, mm-hmm. and then in my 30s, and then again when I was dealing with this. So she had my whole history. And it was that made it a lot easier. And so I said, when did she change? And she said, she's always been like this. You just didn't realize it.
Yeah. You couldn't realize it. You couldn't let yourself realize it at a certain point.
And again, I wasn't the target. My sister was much more the target. That is a struggle for me that I didn't protect my sister, even though I know intellectually I was a child. I couldn't protect my sister and it was going to be somebody. My mother was going to target somebody. It's how she functions.
Is your sister in touch with your mother?
She is now the golden child, a position I think she enjoys. Because mm-hmm. And who wouldn't? Because she never got what she needed. And right. I'm the scapegoat. Yeah. And I have some... she's also very angry with me because she has had to be the number one person for our mother. Right. And I've said to her, you don't have to be, that's not a position you have to be in.
I had the same conversations with my sister, whose response was always, but of course I do, because if I don't, all hell will break loose.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it also speaks to that for you and I, estrangement was the answer for the way we needed to live our life. And mm-hmm. I respect that that's not the choice for everyone. I'll say it's a struggle for me when I see clients grow in joy and competency and confidence when they limit contact with the parent and then think, oh, I can handle it because I'm so much stronger now and mm-hmm. get sucked back in. Mm-hmm. I can see their mental health drops. It's hard to be healthy in an unhealthy relationship.
And as you say, and people go through that again and again, usually before they get to that realization, if they ever do, that like, the only way for me to be healthy was, you know, is to not have this relationship as a daily. Of course, you still have a relationship with the person in your head. Mm-hmm. You always will, especially if it's a parent, right? Like you can't get them out of your head, but it's sad, but it's very necessary for some people to have to make that line. But yeah, it's really hard.
So what message do you have for people who are either contemplating some level of estrangement or are in those early stages when it's so painful and scary?
The first thing I would say is one of the things that people used to say to me about my relationship with my mother was, you're going to regret this. She's your only mother. And honestly, the only regret I have is that I did not estrange earlier. I think that would have been much, much better for me. I don't think any other outcome was possible. So there's that, which I hope might be helpful to someone. And there's also the understanding that like, you can't make someone else into something that they're not. You can't fix a relationship by yourself. And if it was a huge lift for my life to estrange from my mother, and you know, even just saying those words, I'm laughing nervously because mm-hmm. it sounds awful. It sounds, and I could just, and honestly, if you go to Goodreads and read the reviews of my book, you'll hear a lot of people saying some pretty mean things. Yeah, you're going to get some flack, but the benefits far outweighed the downsides for me. And trust yourself. I don't think anyone in this situation, no one that I've ever talked to, didn't try hard enough. I would say the opposite is true, that we spend so many years trying to contort ourselves to make this relationship work. And by the time you might be starting to think, maybe I need to step away, like, trust that, because you've tried everything else and you can't fix it.
And I am so surprised that people were critical of your book for not being pure memoir, because again, I love that about it. And I hope that people listening will go get it, because not only is it so well researched, but of course you have all the notes in the back. So you right. people can go and seek out those resources right. and know that they're truly not alone.
There was something very validating about talking to that one researcher for me and then reading her work and knowing, oh my God, yes. Of course, I knew that all intellectually before, but it is really helpful to hear what other people say and to understand that there are patterns, that this isn't just, I think our tendency is often to think, this is just something about me, there's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with the way I am or whatever, but there are clear patterns. So like, for example, there are patterns about what kinds of relationships wind up in estrangement. And it's like alcoholism and substance abuse are big catalysts for that, but also where like the child, since we're talking about children and parents, experiences abuse of some kind. Like that is a huge pattern. And that's not something that's your fault. That's something that happens in the relationship. And it's not because, yeah, kids, we so much need to hang on to that idea of our parents as mythical, godlike creatures that we would much rather think when we're little that there's something wrong with us. But fortunately, adulthood teaches you otherwise.
And it turns out, like you said, we're stereotypes of estrangement. Our stories are pretty dang common. We find out we have a lot in common with other people who are estranged.
Which is very, it's both bittersweet and it's empowering. Mostly it's empowering.
And that's the other thing I want to get to is, could you very quickly tell people about your other books?
Yeah. So a couple of my other books are, I wrote a book that was published in 2010 called Brave Girl Eating. And that also similarly was part memoir and part research. One of my daughters developed an eating disorder and it was about our efforts to help her recover, but it was also about the state of research and treatment in the world of eating disorders. And then that sort of led me down a rabbit hole. And I wrote a book in 2015 called Body of Truth, which was looking more closely at the research on weight and health and deconstructing it and demythologizing it. And yeah.
Yeah. So because I want listeners to know that you have two other books that they probably want to read. And one of them is because it does talk a lot about your mothering relationship and about how relationships can be healing in that way. Mm-hmm. And then your second book, because many of us who have difficult mothers, it turns out, don't feel good about our bodies. And maybe there's a coincidence. I don't know. But I'm thinking some people who are listening might get a lot out of that book, which I have to keep buying new copies of because I keep loaning it to clients and then it goes away. But that's okay because people really need that book.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Sure. No, thank you for being you, Harriet. And also I think if people read your books, they could say, hey, this is a high quality person who has a difficult relationship with her mother. Could it be that I am also a high quality person, even though my mother doesn't like or love me very much?
I hope that's true. I hope people do feel that kind of solidarity. And again, it's not to dump on the mothers and this, like you said, your mother did the best she could with what she had and with where she came from. And that's what we all do on some level.
Okay, there you have it. That's our interview with Harriet Brown, author of Shadow Daughter, a Memoir of Estrangement. And now I want to give a special message to those of you who may be struggling with estrangement or a relationship that's difficult and painful. Maybe you're trying to figure out how to set boundaries, and I wanted to speak specifically to you. And the first thing I wanted to say is if you're not in therapy, I encourage you to find a good therapist who understands conflicts in families and isn't going to move you directly to resolution with that family member, but instead is able to sit with you while you figure out what you want to do next. Because maybe resolution is going to be in your future, or maybe you've got a situation like mine where that other person is not willing to meet you halfway or meet you anyway, really. And I wanted to talk about how incredibly painful that is. And I want you to know that I see your pain and I acknowledge it and that I am thinking of you in it. I remember when I first became estranged from my mom, I really thought it was temporary. And I thought that I could change something about myself to make it different. Like I could make myself more tolerant or find a way to communicate better or set boundaries that she would honor. took a lot of therapy to realize that that simply was not going to happen and that I had very little control. Well, I had no control over how the relationship was going to play out. I could only control the way I behaved in it. It took a long time to I guess, give up on the idea that one day my mom and I would run into each other's arms. And that was a big thing to give up because, of course, we all yearn to be loved and accepted and understood by the people who are meant to love us best, which are our parents. Some of our parents are simply not capable of doing that. That says everything about them and very little about us. There was a while where I was walking around really ashamed of being an unloved daughter. Like, what did it say about me that my own mother couldn't love me? It took a long time for me to realize it didn't actually say anything about me except that I am a survivor. And it said a lot about my mom's ability to love back. I can't fix my mom. It's not my job to fix her. She is allowed to choose not to have a relationship with me. She is allowed to choose how she wants to treat me. And I get to respond to that. I get to choose how I respond to it. And that's a powerful place to be, to recognize that I do have control over my own experiences, my own emotional responses, my own practical responses. When I realized that, when I was no longer being shaped by this idea that I had to change myself in some way to be acceptable to my mother, I realized I was free to define my life in so many wonderful ways. I didn't know that I spent 40 plus years of my life trying to earn her love and acceptance and respect. When I gave up on ever earning it, I was free to be the person that I needed and wanted to be. I was able to define myself and no longer expect my mother to define me. Even though it was really one of the most painful experiences that I have been through, resolving the reality of our estrangement, I can tell you from the other side that I am the happiest I've ever been. And while I would never wish estrangement on anyone, or even regret that I didn't estrange from my mother sooner, because I feel like I had a lot of lessons to learn in that, I do regret how long I stayed unhappy and full of self-loathing and hypercritical. I wish I had learned earlier that I was lovable, that I am a kind and compassionate person, and that my mother's struggles with me speak more about her struggles with herself than they do with my quality or my value as a human being. If you are stuck in that place, I hope you can get to the other side too. I have faith that you can. And again, I encourage you to seek out a good therapist who can get you there. I encourage you to go and get Harriet's book and read it so you know you are not alone. And of course, you are welcome to join my membership. It is Child Anxiety Support. There is a You Are Not Your Mother group inside the rest of the membership, and you are welcome to join that too. Right now, through January 1st, 2022, I am making the Get Yourself Grounded mini course free inside the course. So you can go to childanxietysupport.com. You can click join, and then you have a choice to either join the full membership, which is all the courses and classes and webinars and live events, but you can also join Get Yourself Grounded, and that's a free mini course. I think it takes 4 or 5 days, and it's really about bringing you back to yourself and bringing a measure of calm and presence into your holiday season, which is why it's free until January 1st. So I hope to see you there, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast. If you feel so inclined and you know someone who might benefit from hearing it, I hope you'll share it with them too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.